Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to tell you about another great ESPN podcast you should listen to. The CJ McCollum Show, where every week New Orleans Pelicans star CJ McCollum discusses names and storylines in and around the NBA with the inside perspective you can only get from someone in the locker room and on the floor. That's the CJ McCollum Show. Listen where you are listening to this podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Thanks for watching us on YouTube. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. This is that time of week where we have a guest join us, coming to us live from the West Coast. Got up early with us. Check him out at Slate. Check him out on Hang Up and Listen. Check out his new story on Herschel Walker. In an election that is not finished, and I sure wish that it was one way or another. Joel Anderson, what's going on?
Oh, what's up, man? Thanks for having me on. Also, I just got to indulge H-time. Me for a second. You know what I'm saying? H-Town.
I was actually thinking about this with the Astros, because I think you may have grown up rooting for the Astros. I didn't. There was no shade to the Astros, but I had a team before we got to Houston, you know, and they was already in the division. You know what I'm saying? Like, there wasn't no ship jumping on that one.
I don't begrudge you that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But no matter how much black people do or do not watch baseball, that ain't got nothing to do with the local baseball cap. There is no way to put on for your city quite like the local baseball cap. That is the biggest, I want to let y'all know where I'm from situation right there.
Absolutely. Man, bro, I mean, actually, if you looked at the championship parade too, man, I know the numbers on black folks in baseball are what they are, but it is not reflected in who was out there talking, who was showing up, you know what I'm saying, who was on Facebook, you know, throwing up the H, throwing up the Astros, talking about Dusty, you know what I'm saying?
Well, that's the next level, man. We got like Uncle Dusty, right? Like nobody says that explicitly, but nobody gives you more cool uncle than Dusty Baker. Nobody in the world, right? That's why we let him slide when he says somewhat absurd things from time to time.
I mean, absolutely. Well, I mean, the toothpick thing reminds me of my dad. It reminds me of every uncle I've ever had, you know, just having it right there in their mouth, just sitting in there. Like I grew up wanting to do that. Like I remember going to every restaurant and doing a toothpick in my mouth, just like my pops, and like, oh, Dusty Baker does that. He's representing for the culture, you know?
Right. I tell you this though, I've been thinking about this with Game Theory. I got to figure out how do I get down there and just kick it with Dusty Baker listening to vinyl, because you know he's a music junkie, right?
Like, oh yeah, that's right.
He could be a music critic, like a professional music critic. Like he's in music on that level. I just want to go to Dusty's house with a stack of vinyl, because you know his system is like that. You know it's like that.
Oh, he has a system in a way that like people in the 70s and 80s had. I bet, you know, probably has a whole wall laid out with speakers and everything else and surround sound and the whole joint. You know, also, the one thing about Dusty that I really like is that he didn't run from the idea of being a black manager winning a World Series was significant. And like that, like when you talk about the Uncle Dusty part of it, I'm just like, yo, don't run from it. Say that, yeah, I don't, you know, me being old, whatever, but me being black doing this, this is actually meaningful. And I was really disappointed when Todd Bowles sort of downplayed the impact of him coaching against Mike Tomlin. I understand why he did, whatever. Like everybody can feel differently about it. But did Dusty don't run from it? That's a dude that you know has been raised up in the game by, you know, the people that brought him in. They taught him about the importance of that and representing in the game. Yeah. You know?
Well, I think there are two things, though. One, I do not think that Todd Bowles coaching against Mike Tomlin in a regular season game was a big deal. Right. Like I did think that particular matchup, but if they were both Dungy guys or something like that, I think I might have looked at that one a little different. Todd Bowles is just like, damn, man, you realize how much I got to deal with over here as it is. And now you out here trying to make it February. You know what I'm saying? He's just like, nah, I'm not going there. But let me tell you something about baseball. I was talking to Howard about this. I don't want to say which player he was talking about, but one former player from our childhood talked to Dusty. And I mean, talked to Howard. It was just like, you don't understand, man. Like we mow down for each other over here than anywhere else.
They got is us.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that was his thing. We mow down for each other in baseball. than any other sport. He was like, the fraternity of black baseball players and understanding the significance of blackness is not lost on any of those dudes over there. And so for Dusty, like, we got to remember with Dusty, he's the connective tissue to Hank Aaron and Willie Mays. Like, yes. He's really taking you back. And I think it's easy to forget about both of those guys is that they hit the big leagues at the relative dawn of integration, right? Like, mm-hmm. There's a few years between them and, say, Jackie Robinson, but I think Willie Mays came up in, like, 1951. That's 4 years after Jackie Robinson. That's, like, almost 10 years before some teams actually got a black player. And those are like Dusty Baker's daddies is Willie Mays and Hank Aaron. How lucky is that?
Oh, yeah. And also, I mean, he was the one that brought up Cito Gaston after the World Series, right? He's like, hey, man, I was a young brother out there in Little Rock, Arkansas. And look, I've heard what you've had to say about Arkansas on the show before, so I ain't going to get into it.
You never said nothing about Arkansas ain't never said.
but my family's from there. I feel like I got the right to say it.
Okay.
but fair enough. But yeah, he said I was in Little Rock, Arkansas, at the time that he was there, which, I mean, if you in Little Rock, Arkansas, 1951 to 1991, it's still a very tough place.
Yes.
but he told that story to say that, hey, look, man, we've been looking out for each other. And I just remember when you had Nelson George on and he talked about how Willie Mays would have dudes over to the house. And so, yeah, I mean, now that you mention it, you're right, man. If you're a black American baseball player, like, you are connected. It goes back a ways. And they're really understanding of the importance of those connections and looking out for people in the game. Because, like you said, there's just not many of them. There's not enough of them to quibble, so to speak.
And if I'm Dusty, man, I would like to announce my retirement undefeated for video boxing. Like, right now, it's a wrap. Really? I ain't coming back.
Hey, he's 73, man. Why would he quit? What do you want? What else he gonna do?
Sit at the crib and listen to music. Man, like, he came back for a very specific reason, I think. Win a World Series, go to the Hall of Fame. You got
I hear that, but man, you know how it is, man. When you get to be, I think the thing is, when you get that old, you want to have purpose, man. You gotta get up, you want to have something to do every day. And oh, no, I mean,
I feel you.
You know, I mean, look, Dusty, come on back. If you want to come on back home, you want to try to get number three, then come on, let's do it. You know?
Here's all I'm saying, man. Hang around long enough and they'll run you out for some bullshit. This man been fired 3 different times the season after winning 90 games. I personally would like to quit on my own terms. That would be me.
That's a fair point. He should know he should know the people around him. He knows that they're not in it for the long haul with him, at least, you know. So, yeah. But, you know, look, 73 years old, man. I was like, yeah, look, what's another year? And I think that, you know, he's got a little time now. He's won a championship. I don't think they would fire him next year. But, hey, man, you know, a lot of stuff happens unprecedented.
I was about to say, man, they're a little unpredictable, dog. Like that whole, they ain't going to do that. But they might.
I didn't think Frank Reich was going to get fired. You know what I mean?
Yo, so I felt fairly confident that Frank Reich was going to get fired after they fired the offensive coordinator last week, right? Like, we're running out of people to fire.
Another young brother, by the way, offensive coordinator.
Yeah, the young brother. And the young brother didn't. I mean, what was he going to do, right, with the quarterback situation that they wound up with or whatever? But when they fired him, I was like, oh, okay. The only next step to take here is to fire the head coach. Like, that's the only thing that you have left.
But, I mean, here's the thing. Why? You and I, you remember when we both saw together that Sam Ehlinger was going to be the quarterback? And we were like, okay, what the hell are we supposed to do with that? How is that his fault? You know, how is Sam Ehlinger a move that Jim Irsay wanted, by the way? He wants Sam Ehlinger to play. So,
but that's the problem. He wants it, so you go. We gonna get somebody in here who can make it work with Sam Ehlinger.
I mean, look, man. Tom Herman couldn't make it work with Sam Ehlinger.
Tom Herman couldn't make it work with Sam Ehlinger. I don't know, like, what wizard would be able to make it work with Sam Ehlinger in the NFL. Irsay sees something about him, and Irsay just seemed like he on his individual streak right now, right? So, like, case in point, I think Golic hit me with a text. It was like, Junior, just to be clear, it said, yeah, I now believe that Jim Irsay acted alone on the Dan Snyder thing. Like, after the Jeff Saturday hire, he was like, yeah, I now believe that he acted alone on that. So, like, he went and did that. He made this wholly unprecedented move to Can you think of a time that somebody made an external hire for the interim?
I've never heard of that. And I was wondering, I was hoping that you all had the information on that at ESPN. Cause even when I first heard it, I was like, oh, I thought Jeff Saturday was on TV. I didn't know that he was on the Colts staff. Like, that's what I immediately thought. And I was like, oh, wait, he's not even working for the Colts. So what does that say for the staff there, by the way, for one?
Well, here's the thing. He had been, I mean, he's worked as a consultant, but God knows what that means, right? So he had been there. Everybody went to race on this one, right? Mm,
right.
And
understandably so. Understandably so.
Sort of. It is an understandable null hypothesis, but it's worth it to stop and think about it for a second before we roll out with the null hypothesis as actually being the conclusion. And so this is the thing to me. Anytime somebody in the NFL makes a ridiculous move as it relates to coaching, right? Mm-hmm. The first move for everybody is, but y'all can't hire a black man, right? Now, we could do that with just about literally every industry that there is if we so decided, if we wanted to do on that, right?
Right.
This was so absurd, though, that for me, it was going to take a while before I got around to the race part. I was too caught up on, you just made an external interim hire in the middle of the season. And the reason to me that the jump to the race part is premature, what about the white man? Like, yes, this one white man got this boost up into this. John Fox is right there with two trips to the Super Bowl. He got to the Super Bowl with Jake DeLome. And this is an important point. The interim is very often not a coordinator, because making a position coach the interim helps with stability. And so now the offensive coordinator doesn't have to worry about calling timeouts and doesn't have to worry about challenges or whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. John Fox is a senior defensive assistant. Like, that is a prime person to be the interim coach. And you know John Fox would love to be a head coach again. I honestly don't know why he shouldn't be able to be. Oh, I forgot he had that thing. He did coach the Bears for a little while. That was his last chance.
Man, I forgot about that. Oh my God.
I did too until this very moment. But okay. He would like to be a coach again. Gus Bradley, like, you know, he's defensive coordinator. He's like, damn, dog, it was Jacksonville. What y'all expect out of me? They didn't promote him either. Like, there were able-bodied white men right there. People like, well, what about Reggie Wayne if you're going to get somebody with no experience? No, why are you getting somebody with no experience? Let's start there.
What do you go into that locker room? And this is something you can ask Dominique or whoever about this. What do you tell those players in the locker room? Hey, man, I know we got Sam Ellinger, quarterback. I know we got a guy who was a high school head coach very recently, and not coach above that, but go out there and fight every Sunday. Like, what are you supposed to tell those guys? Because, I mean, they still got to go out there and get hurt. You know what I mean? What are they sacrificing their bodies for if this is the plan?
Oh, here's what you tell them. Eye in the sky don't lie. That is the only motivation. Eye in the sky don't lie. If you try to get this money, you might want to get out here and ball. The guy I feel bad for is Jonathan Taylor, right? Jonathan Taylor was looking like he could be like Derrick Henry. I said, like, possibly the last Hall of Fame running back. You know what I mean? Because you can't get enough carries anymore to do the things that our minds say make you a Hall of Fame running back. But Jonathan Taylor was shaping up after literally the most underrated collegiate career that any player has ever had. He was becoming that dude in the league. They ain't got no offensive line, and they ain't got no quarterback. What? Yeah.
I mean, but he's hurt right now, right? So maybe maybe he going to stay hurt. But yeah, I feel bad for him. You know, the funny thing was too, to back out for a second. I remember when I heard that Frank Reich got fired and they hired Jeff Saturday. And I was like, man, you can tell that the NFL has really changed because Romeo Crennel and Terry Robiskie didn't get that job. Like, that's a job for Terry Robiskie, you know?
And you know why that was a job for Terry Robiskie? Because Terry Robiskie's a running backs coach rather than a coordinator. And so he's always right there to steady the ship and get him a couple extra, you know, get a little boost on that paycheck for the last 4 weeks. You know what I'm saying? Get some time and a half.
This is like, hey man, okay, I do a little something else. Don't take me nothing to do the pregame speech, you know.
But see, that was my problem with so many people though, who like I think as a null hypothesis, the race thing was worth bringing
you,
up.
You got to explain what a null hypothesis is to the people, to those of us who are not as smart as you, son.
My bad. The null hypothesis is, hey, I think this is what happened. Okay, that's what you start with, and then from there we test whether or not that's the case. And on this one, I don't think it really like stood up that tough to the test. And here's why I don't think it really stood up to the test more than anything else. If they had given that job to a black dude, I don't want to say what everybody else would say, but I know what I would have said. See,
he ain't got no chance.
There they go, giving us a situation where we ain't got no chance. So why are we so thirsty that we want a job for somebody else that we would not want for ourselves? People are like, well, hey man, it's a chance. No, it's not a chance.
It's not a chance, but we don't know. I mean, maybe the next interim coach will be Marv Levy, a Don Coryell, or Art Shell. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean,
but that's the thing. Even
maybe
if
Sam Ellinger.
If they are those people, that don't mean we gonna get the job. It's more likely that it's not a winner of a job, and then you losing is gonna be held against you.
I agree. I guess the thing is that so you're either dealing with I don't even get a shot at that job, or I get a shot at a job that is most likely going to be bad. And I don't know which is worse. Like, do you want to never be considered? Because, I mean, some of these guys will never. I mean, I think about a guy like Raheem Morris. I was thinking about Raheem the other day and I was like, man, where's Raheem Morris? He went actually in the whole scheme of things. He wasn't that bad as a head coach for the Bucks. So no, like
he just got the job too young. And right. Like his strategy of I'm hood just like them was not the best presentational approach for being an NFL head.
Oh, so you're saying
he took
the Robert Sarver approach to coaching?
Yes, he did. Robert Sarver was the first person they had down there. They had Raheem down there. But the story for me with Raheem is Raheem looked around and said, look, man, they only hiring offensive coaches to be head coaches. Then I'm going to be an offensive coach. And then he went and he became a wide receivers coach and moved up like assistant head coach type stuff. But then the Falcons got caught in that situation where they needed to get their defensive coordinator situation right. Raheem went and did that. They made him the interim. He does not have that job. He's now the defensive coordinator with the Rams where he won a Super Bowl. Right. But he's still over there as defensive coordinator of the Rams. And this is what I'm saying. But I'm saying this. If one of these cats comes up there and does that Colts job and they don't win no games, which is entirely possible, that dude is never getting another chance to be a head coach. I saw somebody, and like I said, I think there's just a lot of reflex where the NFL has no credibility. Therefore, every time something like this happens, you're going to have people challenge it. Where somebody was like, I was like, yo, the interim gig, I just don't think it's that good. And somebody was like, well, Dan Campbell parlayed that and do a head job. And I was like, he did that 6 years later or something crazy. You know what I mean? Like, I do think there are a lot of people who are primed up because this is an issue that's so constant that it's easy to be like, cool, this is the thing we're going to jump on. And then, of course, our lovely, performative, attempted ally, Caucasian brothers and sisters. They know that's the right answer right now because it's never the wrong answer. It's always the right answer because the league is always wrong when it comes to it. But I got worried about this one when Irsay in the press conference then was like, and hopefully he'll be the coach much longer. And then it was like, okay, now you're doing things. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Well, so, I mean, it makes you wonder, does it even matter what the record is? Right. Like, because Irsay could just say, well, hey, man, look, I didn't give him much of a chance. I just wanted to see those leadership abilities on the sideline. I just wanted a glimpse at it. I think he could do it when we give him the team he needs. The problem is that the problem there isn't the coach. It's the GM, right? Like, I mean, how many years are we going to do this?
Yeah.
I mean, they've not recovered since Andrew Luck left, which is understandable, right? I mean, franchise quarterback, he was great, but – I mean, at what point are we going to be like, all right, man, like somebody else has got to call the shots here, or maybe they're going to give Chris Ballard a chance And this is why they brought Jeff Saturday in. They're going to give Jeff Saturday a chance to be on the tanking team, and Chris Ballard can select Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, Will Levis, whatever, and then they'll go from there.
Well, I think for me, the trick bag of figuring out whose fault it is this. The quarterback situation, right? They have a quarterback problem, but they did something with quarterback. The Lions have done this thus far that I kind of think more teams should do, but I understand why they don't, which is don't force it. If there's not a quarterback there, don't take a quarterback, right?
Absolutely.
I think New England's going to ask themselves that question about going with Mac Jones, right? Like, he all right. Do you want to take a quarterback where you just look at him and be like, he all right, right? So the Colts did a lot of stopgap stuff, but understandable. The year with Phillip Rivers, not a bad idea. Carson Wentz, if you didn't think he was finished, now, most of us thought he was, but you can understand why Frank Reich didn't. Okay, give that a try. Relatively young guy, if you can get it going, cool. But if you don't see a guy in the draft that you think is the guy, like, that's how I feel about Pittsburgh and Kenny Pickett.
Yeah.
But I'm like, hey, man, I don't think the guy, I don't think he's a guy. I don't think he's there, but he was the guy that was available. Right. And so they went ahead and took him, and now you stuck for a couple of years trying to figure out if he's the guy.
Absolutely. No, I agree. I don't necessarily have any problems with the way the Colts approached it. I tend to be a process guy over a results guy. So you can make an excuse for each juncture for why this didn't work out. Like Matt Ryan. I didn't think Matt Ryan was finished, but I thought that he could be okay-ish, because the theory was that he's playing behind what would have been the best offensive line, great running back in Jonathan Taylor, and enough talented wide receiver to get by. But like when the offensive line fell apart, then you see for sure that Matt Ryan ain't got nothing left. But his arm was cooked. That was the thing.
Right. His brain was at that, I can figure out how to make it work. But I've been saying his arm was cooked for years. And then Falcons fans, I was like, look, I didn't even say he was totally cooked, but his arm was cooked. But then you do that. Old people all like this, man. You can't take them out of their familiar situation and then think everything going to be okay.
Well, they did that with Phillip Rivers. I mean, if Phillip Rivers was older.
Yeah, but he wasn't cooked.
Yeah, fair point. I hadn't been watching a lot of Falcons games as of late, so I couldn't tell. But on paper, it seemed to have made sense. Yeah. And like you said, there wasn't a quarterback in the draft that anybody had to have this year. But I might make that case this year. Like, I don't
really.
Look, man, there's more than enough reason to be concerned about whether or not Bryce Young is an NFL quarterback, right? Like, we just gotten over the idea that he's not a big dude at all.
No, yeah, that's like, my thing. I'm not here for little quarterbacks.
He has athleticism. He has some escapability, but like that is not necessarily his bag. So what advantage is he going to have in the NFL?
Yeah. The size thing worries me. Right. And he's not an like supreme great athlete, right? Like he can move, he can make things happen. But yeah, I'm worried about a 6 foot tall, 195 pound quarterback. Like that's I'll always be that.
He's small in college.
Yeah. Even if you want the shorter quarterback, he's not built, to me at least, and you tell me if I'm wrong, like Russell Wilson or Kyler Murray, like one of those sturdier type dudes.
Those are barrels, man. Kyler Murray and Russell Wilson. And also like hyper athletes, man. Like, I mean, Kyler Murray is like an incredible athlete. He was a first round pick in MLB draft. I don't think Bryce is that kind of an athlete. And then, I mean, I don't know, man. You know, reasonable minds can disagree about CJ Stroud, but the one thing that I've heard about him that they've said is that he's not great under pressure. Okay.
Bad news. That's not
how the NFL works. Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, and Will Levis, I mean, I don't know. You got to show me a quarterback from Kentucky first. I mean, you know, I thought Tim Couch was going to be amazing. You know, I'm from the era when Tim Couch was supposed to be good. So
I tell you what I would do. I don't care what nobody says. Georgia fans got mad at me about something like this that I said before, but I'll say it now in a different context. If Anthony Richardson is sitting there in the second round, I am rolling the dice. If Anthony Richardson is sitting there at the end of the first round, I'm rolling the dice, and I'm going to be the person that I don't think anybody else should ever be, which is to say, well, look at Josh Allen. Like, that is, man, I see it with Anthony Richardson. Like, because what I said that made people mad was, And I let these people working on this show make a slate that put the quote out there and got the people all riled up, and they ain't even bothered to listen to what I was talking about. Because I said I'd rather have Anthony Richardson than Stetson Bennett. My point was,
which is reasonable.
My point is, I want the high ceiling guy.
Yeah.
Right. Like, that's what it's going to be. I want the high ceiling guy, and the ceiling on that guy is so high. Yeah. I just don't know whose fault it is that it has not been put together up until this point.
Well, that's my concern with Anthony Richardson, the fact that he hasn't put it together, because at some point you want to see something, right? You want to be like, all right, like, he's eventually, I can see the pieces of what would be an eventual great NFL quarterback. Right now, I just see a really great athlete.
Yeah.
But I'll take your word for it. Maybe he will, he will pop up.
Yeah,
I can understand the second round thing. But I wouldn't hinge my hopes on that. And I don't think anybody would.
Oh, no. But that's the thing. I would rather roll the dice on an Anthony Richardson in the second round than a Kenny Pickett in the first round. I guess I'm saying. Because I'm not really locked into anything with a second round pick.
I never saw any of those guys. I never saw Kenny Pickett and thought, man, that dude definitely gonna win. I totally agree. Like, I definitely don't think you should take a quarterback in the first round unless you are absolutely convinced that guy. Like, my theory on this has always been, if it's not Andrew Luck, if it's not, I guess Trevor Lawrence, even though he hasn't necessarily, turned out to what we thought he was going to be so far, then don't worry about it. Just get one of those little veterans, trade water, and maybe take a developmental guy later in the draft.
But then you become the Colts.
Right. Well, right? I mean,
that's the dilemma.
Hey, as Jim Irsay said, we've been in the top quartile of the top quartile for the last decade or something. So, they have had some success. In spite of that, I mean, with Phillip Rivers, they made the playoffs. Like, and people thought they were going to be really good this year. This year it all bottomed out, but I just don't think that this is representative of what that franchise has been doing in the past few years. Like, I think it's just a lot of bad luck.
I think there's something to that.
Yeah, like, I don't think there was any reason for them to panic. I don't think they had to fire Marcus Brady or Frank Reich. I think there's a way to say the offensive line is not as good as we thought it was going to be. Matt Ryan is not as good as we thought he was going to be. Let's just start over, but we got the guts of a really good franchise here, or a good foundation here, and they're just blowing it all up. Who the hell knows?
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope. Because
I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, here's the other part of this, too. To me, you mentioned Chris Ballard. Irsay must absolutely be using this as a show of confidence for Chris Ballard. And the reason I say that is, what general manager are you going to hire who's got this coach who ain't never coached before? You know what I mean? Like, you come after this season, and if Irsay is hell-bent on Saturday being the coach, you're not going to be able to find another general manager. Because A, a general manager is going to want to bring on his own guy. But right. B, even if he can't bring on his own guy, this is not the guy that he necessarily is going to want to have.
And is that a conversation you want to have with Jim Irsay about? Like, I mean, you come in and it's like, all right, man, I know that, Jeff Saturday is your boy. He seems like a really nice dude, but this isn't going to work. Like, that's just not a conversation. I wouldn't have confidence in myself that I could convince him that this is a bad idea.
Nah, what you do on that is you come in and you lie. And then you spend your whole time just laying the groundwork, and you're gonna have a real hard time doing this because it's kind of impossible not to like Jeff.
He seems like a really nice guy. Man.
And one thing Jeff gonna be good at is Jeff is from what I can tell and what I've been told, an aisle crosser. You know what I mean?
Okay. All right. Okay. All right.
He know how to talk to all
know how to do the
position
ducky,
group.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Okay,
no, but right. not like, but not that archetype of it. You know what I mean? Okay. Like he's the big old white dude. He's from Tucker, somewhere outside Atlanta, you know? And okay, the thing Tucker. Is, but being white and from Atlanta don't mean nothing as it relates to your relationships with black people, because white people avoid black people like the plague in Atlanta, right? Absolutely. So it ain't even that. He's a dude that just works well with all the rooms, and he's been that. And so, you know, maybe that's something that ends up being helpful to him. I just, what I want people, as I think about it, though, going back to like the Rooney Rule stuff or whatever, like for me, I got so much energy and I got so much capital and equity that I can expend on these matters. This isn't the one that I was getting out here and cashing nothing in on. Like, it was just too much other stuff that was going on here. And I'm like, nah, nah, nah. It's not even a boy who cried wolf situation, because it's not really that. But it's more so you could get up and get your food out the microwave yourself, but you screaming for somebody else to come over here, man. Nah, man, just go do it this time. You know, like this time, this one. Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. We call a foul on every play if we want to, but I'm really not sure this one was a foul.
No,
not that foul.
I see both sides of it. I understand why people can look at that situation and say, you know what? There's not a black coach that could come from outside of an organization, be a high school coach, and get that sort of position. And we can quibble about whether or not it's a real opportunity or not. Mm-hmm. Jim Irsay is saying that it is, and that he wants to do something with him. And there's not a black guy that would ever get that opportunity.
No.
But I also agree with you in that that ain't a job you want. You know what I'm saying? And like Terry Robiskie could tell you.
And there's never been a white guy to get this opportunity. Right? Like, that's right. The thing. White folks was hot.
Yeah. Yeah,
like,
it's white
folks, it's like, what about you? What about me?
I mean, fair point. Fair point. And look, I mean, I don't like to be this kind of a guy, but Jim Irsay did hire Tony Dungy, and he did hire Jim Caldwell. And like, we can say that that doesn't matter, but it actually does. Like, I think it does.
Here's the thing. And basically, white folks lost the benefit of the doubt a long time ago in the NFL about this, right? Mm-hmm. It is not uncommon when it's time to hire somebody for whatever the job may be that someone say, oh, I know exactly who I want to hire for this job.
Yes.
And then they go hire that person. But because the NFL is messed up so much, they put themselves in a position where they have to go through a certain protocol because they haven't earned the benefit of the doubt, right?
Right.
But Jim Irsay did once wake up and say, I know exactly who I want to hire to be my head coach. And that person was Tony Dungy.
Right.
You know, this isn't about Irsay in terms of the Rooney Rule stuff as it is the macro level issues. And see, what mm-hmm. Irsay going to do to make everybody's life hard is people were like, well, there's no Rooney Rule requirement for interim coaching. Of course not. Nobody has like a full process for hiring an interim. Now Irsay going to make it where they got to.
I mean, by its nature, you are in chaos. Like, this is like if you have to go to an interim coach, things have gone awry and you're making decisions in the middle of tumult. And so, yeah, I don't know how you could or why you would even really want to have a process for that. Because I think at that point, if a team is turned into an interim coach, it's all bad.
Yeah,
like, good teams don't have an interim coach. Yeah, right.
Like, we need interim coach. That's a substitute teacher. That's like, right. Yo, we need a substitute teacher. Cool. Make 3 phone calls, get their references, and then see if they can make it by 7:15.
right. Can you be okay? We'll take care of it. The only thing though, again, is that like for Jeff Saturday's sake, and the players in that locker room's sake, I just like, hey man, you got to convince those guys that there's something worth playing for this year. I mean, again, you say the eye in the sky, but I mean, we all know what the deal is, man. They tanking for Webiyama, man. You know what I mean? So, I mean, again, the Sam Ellinger thing was the first clue.
Oh my God.
Colt McCoy did not end up being a good NFL quarterback. But if you had told me Colt McCoy had got that position, I'd have been like, all right, that makes sense. Sam Ellinger? Come on, dog.
I can't believe he has played a down of NFL football.
I didn't think he was going to get drafted. Like, for him, he got drafted in the 6th round, and I still was like, really? They drafted Sam Ellinger? I thought he was going to be an insurance agent or a car salesman by now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, doing radio. Like, radio? He could probably do radio down there.
That's true. He does have the we're back thing, you know what I'm saying? He does have a little bit of cachet down there.
They won a Sugar Bowl. He's like a 4-year starter. basically. He's a local.
I would love to hear what George Foster has to say about that Sugar Bowl victory, by the way.
Oh, I mean, it's so bogus. It's such that was not a real half of Georgia's team wasn't in the game. Yeah. You know, speaking of Georgia, you mentioned Stetson Bennett. Do you watch P-Valley?
No, I don't watch P-Valley, man.
Stetson Bennett kind of looked like one of the characters in P-Valley, and I'm curious to see who the first listener is to know who it is that I'm talking about.
Oh, I got to see this then. I got to look it up.
Hold on. As we are doing this, I'm going to pull this up on the phone, and I'm going to send you something about who the character is, and you will have a better understanding of what I'm talking about. But it's this family, and they got three sons, and he reminds me of the youngest son, who's got a little bit of a different situation than his other brothers.
Okay, he
look a little different than they do.
Really? Okay, so maybe just a different daddy, somebody like that. Okay.
Yeah.
Somebody in snuck in the wood pile.
You get a look at it, but I saw Stetson Bennett. He got some wheels. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I see a resemblance between those two gentlemen, and I will not extrapolate but so much from that. I would just simply say the two gentlemen bear some similarity. I'm having too hard a time remembering the dude's name to really get you the picture. But anyway, by the way, this Georgia thing, you know, I like talking college football with you.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, it seems like every player on Georgia's team is better than whoever is head up against them.
They had five players off that defense draft in the first round last year, right?
Yes.
They're possibly better this year? Or as good? Everybody thought Jalen Carter was better than like Jordan Davis last year, right? Like everybody thought that Jalen Carter was going to be that dude. But I mean, I didn't really think that when people said that, you know, they were going to have to rebuild or whatever. There's no way that I thought they were going to be this good. And I mean, they punished Tennessee, man. Like Tennessee looked really, really good. I didn't think there was any way they could hold them without a touchdown for a whole damn game. And come on, Tennessee didn't score a touchdown in that game by all intents and purposes. You know what I'm saying? So,
somebody hit me and was like, I guess Tennessee was a fraud. I'm like, actually, that's not the lesson that I'm taking from that. Taking from that Georgia's the Monstars.
Yeah, man. And you know, as I got the picture, okay, I can see it. I can see it.
Yeah, I'm putting Stetson right below.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Oh, man. Same jawline and everything, huh? Man, does Stetson know that he got... I mean...
I don't know.
Somebody need to bring it to his attention.
Yeah. I don't know. I think he would prefer you not.
Yeah, well, I mean, P-Valley probably is not his... I've not seen P-Valley, but I can only imagine that is not programming that he is familiar with or associated with in any sort of a way.
Hey, man, you never know what people are into. You know what I'm saying?
He's in college. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. He might have to cross eyes like Jeff Saturday, you know?
While I got you here, we do a little college football talk. Me and Spencer love to talk about this. You and I talk about it more offline, but we keep trying to explain to people what happens when Alabama shows a little weakness. They have lost two games by 4 points.
To top 10 teams.
Top 10 teams.
Yeah.
Both on the road.
Right.
And it both is on the road. Panic time.
But, you know, man, so that it's true. It is panic time. But I guess the thing is, beyond the losses, has Alabama looked good this year to you?
Well, see, that's the thing that makes this very interesting, right?
They didn't look good against Texas or Texas A&M. No,
they didn't look good against Texas A&M. I didn't see the Texas game. They didn't look good against Texas A&M. I mean, they didn't look good against Tennessee. They did not look good against LSU. Like, these are the games that I've seen them play. I guess they look good enough against Arkansas, but the bottom's falling out for Arkansas. But even with them not looking good, if you want to, you spin that as, man, champions finding a way to win. But since the Monstars are over there at Georgia, it's the end of an era.
Yeah. I mean, I know that we talked about this a little bit before, but like, do you think that this is it for Nick Saban? Like, do you think that my belief is that Nick Saban has had all the great seasons he's going to have at this point. And really, I mean, we forget, you know, it's kind of like when we look at LeBron or Tom Brady and you kind of forget, oh, these people are old. Nick Saban is 70 years old, man. Yeah. And when coaches get that old, I mean, every coach before him, Bobby Bowden, Joe Paterno, Eddie Robinson, I'm talking about like his peers. After the age of 70, I mean, among them, maybe they had one good season combined, like one national championship contending season combined. And that, these are some of the greatest coaches in the history of the game. Why would Nick Saban be immune to any of that?
Well, the point that Spencer makes is that the staff ain't there, right? Like the staff, these monstrous... These monster staff that he's built, right? He kept, like, it ain't what it was. And you look around mm-hmm. and a lot of these guys are gone, and that's a part of it, right? So,
right.
But it's wild, though, because 2017, when we were killing Brian Daboll for doing a terrible job coordinating Alabama, little did we know, right? All of a sudden, they put Tua in the second half, and it was like, oh, okay, maybe Brian Daboll halfway knows what it is that he's doing, but he doesn't have a Kirby Smart anymore running things. Right. Offensive coordinator has always been a trick bag job working for Saban, but they had figured that out. And maybe that's it. Maybe it's just a staff thing. They're getting like top five recruiting classes, but not necessarily at the level of Georgia. But the difference between 1 and 5 is not necessarily that great. You know, when it comes to it, but they're going to go 10-2 this year because I just can't. I mean, I'm just not picking Ole Miss to beat them.
Well, but I was going to say, they could lose Ole Miss. I mean, they could.
They could, but I mean, they not. So like they could. I bet they got having their crispest week of practice ever. You think he about to let Lane get over? Oh, no. That ain't about to happen.
I think it's within the realm of possibility, but I also think you're right. But the thing is that Bama has not done that we're going to beat your ass up type team this year. Like they just can't exert their will over people anymore like that. And that's what when Alabama fans are looking at it and they're panicking and unnecessarily so, because I still think you let Nick Saban coach and leave him the hell alone until he doesn't want to coach anymore.
Yeah.
But
that, they can't work like that. They can't. The thing they should know at least about Saban is once he stops meeting their standards, he'll probably quit on his own. That's what Bryant did. Now, granted, he died a month later.
Immediately. Yes. Yeah.
But that's what Brian did. Hey, you deserve better coaching than you're getting from me right now. And by the way, age 69 going on 70. But that's how it went on that job. Alabama, and this is the thing I give them. They're like, hey, man, if you ain't first, you last. Right. They're like, once this thing starts looking like it's on the decline and this is not an anomaly, well, we need to get back on top. Problem is, going and finding that other Nick Saban is an incredibly difficult thing to do. To find another Bear Bryant, it took them 24 years.
Is this the time that people could start talking about somebody coming home to Alabama?
He ain't that stupid.
I'm just saying.
He ain't that stupid.
Is this the time? You know, maybe everybody could use a reset?
He would be an idiot for doing that. I wouldn't
want that job neither, but
especially not post Saban.
Yeah. I mean, you want somebody in the middle, and we're talking about Dabo Swinney for the record, but I mean, you want somebody in the middle there, right? Like you want to replace the guy that replaces Saban and not Saban. But I'm just saying all the resources are there. Like you could look at it and say, well, hell, I mean, I got everything I need here to win.
What competitive advantage does Alabama have over half the SEC? So what advantage do they have over Georgia? That's it.
I mean, nothing. I mean, now that the world is sort of settling in the way that we think it should, according to like demographics, culture, everything else, nothing over Georgia.
What advantage?
Georgia is a cool ass program.
Yeah. What advantage do they have over LSU? What advantage do they have over Florida? There's nothing about Alabama that's like, you should be good. Like they have advantages over Auburn, right? But there's nothing about Alabama that is, you should be good because of this. If Ole Miss hadn't held on to the racism for so long,
it could be them.
Yeah. What would it be? And so that's the thing about Alabama. They got the want to. And so if you are the right guy that can help you punch above your weight class, they're going to do everything to get it done. But I don't think people realize how consistently what they're doing, no matter who you are, is punching above your weight class. I looked this up. 2018's recruiting class, will be the first recruiting class to leave Alabama and not have two national championships in 4 years.
Unbelievable, man.
Since the 2007 recruiting class. Everybody else has gotten out of there with two rings in 4 years. Nobody can do that.
I mean, that's the thing. I just like, I don't think this is, and we're arguing for like reasonableness here, right? And Alabama fans are not known for that. But don't you just have to understand that it will never be this good again in your lifetime? You know what I mean? Like,
that's what it's supposed to be.
You're supposed to understand it. Like, I'm a TCU fan. I know that it will never be better than those years than when we won the Rose Bowl and all that other stuff. Like, I'm just understand that. And I want them to be good and competitive beyond that. But I'm looking at it. But like, again, that's what makes TCU TCU. That's what makes Bama Bama. They're like, oh, hell no. You know, because right. I mean, they got a whole bunch of people around them they hate that they want to be better than too. Like, despite the want to, they hate a lot of them people. How dare they let Auburn, LSU, Georgia, Florida get better than them? They're not going to stand for that, but they may have no choice. I mean, the thing is, they may run up against the reality because Nebraska didn't want it either. Nebraska didn't want this to happen.
Yeah.
they had want to too. Oklahoma didn't want this year to happen. It happened though.
Yeah. Now you're like, this is no way I touch that job, man. And maybe there's a generation of young.
Well, you coaches. Do because you make $9 million. You may make $9 million.
Yeah, maybe Mel Tucker
making
$9 million at Michigan State. You know what I'm saying? Like, finding somebody to pay you $9 million isn't nearly as hard. That you ain't got to do that to get your $9 million. I just the youngsters. Their only hope is the youngsters don't know exactly what this fire breathing dragon is.
It's true. It's true. They don't know what it is. I guess my you know. It's going to be a much more difficult job going forward. But everybody, I mean, there's a generation of kids that have seen Alabama be great. And at least like their down cycle is 10-2. It's not what these other schools are. You know what I'm saying? So like at a minimum, we know that like it's not the bottom has not fallen completely out. And again, maybe we're and we've talked about all this Bomani, and maybe we're still panicking because, I mean, they should have been. Tennessee played as well as they could play. In an environment that was made for them. Like that is, I mean, we haven't seen Tennessee like that in a generation and they still barely won. Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Right. And LSU is like the environment, night game, Tiger Stadium, Brian Kelly, good coach. They're putting it all together. So, I mean, yeah, man, people should just be reasonable about what is going on, but I can understand that it's bigger than that. They're looking at Georgia and they're like, I don't think we're better than them, what we do.
But also the national folks jumped on it, too, because this run has just been so unprecedented. Like, I can't think of any run that is close to this. They have treated the AP poll the way that Oklahoma and Nebraska used to treat the Big Eight. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like when they were always 1-2, always 1-2. That's how Alabama has treated the top five, like the season-ending poll or the playoff committee. That's how they treat it. So I get it that it's like, oh, this is a little bit different, but the terms of, oh, I think they're in trouble. If they go 10-2 every year, that's really good, guys. That's really good. And it'll get Nick Saban fired after the third one.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think that, I mean, he can't have another season like this because then people will start nudging. But, you know, and you mentioned we haven't seen a run like this. And maybe not so, like, I'm just trying to think as a Bama fan. Florida State finished in the top four?
Top five, 14 years in a row.
14 years in a row. And now, what are we supposed to say about Florida? I mean, they did have, you know, the 2013 team, but it's never really been the same since then.
But Florida State was ahead of the game on something when that went down. They were way ahead of the integration game on the rest of the schools in the South. Like Florida State and Miami accelerated the integration of Southern football because they were not operating on caps and quotas like everybody else seemed to. Like the big thing about Alabama in the 70s, relative to the rest of the SEC, they had more want to, and they wanted it bad enough to go ahead and bring some more of them boys on down to make that thing happen. You know what I'm saying? And so Florida and Florida's like what makes the Alabama thing so interesting is they had that run and they really weren't ahead on anything. Like the other thing that Florida and Florida State were ahead on is Florida players.
Right. You know what I mean? That's when the demographics, it was exploding. They needed to go to get them guys first.
Right. Yeah, right. Like, this is before everybody else, which is really wild that nobody figured this out. Before everybody figured out what the talent situation was down there. Alabama wasn't ahead of anything before anybody else. It was just a more like a 100% concentrated power and will. You know, they was out here. They were like, hey, man, we got this. We got saving. We got the right guy to push this thing. We going to make it happen. But that's the thing with Georgia. Are they doing anything other than just doing it better than anybody else? Oregon, when they had their run, which obviously is not the same as this, they were ahead of the game on the way they like marketed themselves to their players with the uniforms and stuff like that, the sports science stuff, the offense. Like, you could see what it was that everybody else had to catch up to. Alabama, you're just out there like, damn, I guess we got to get as good as them.
Right, right. I mean, the thing is, though, is that they're not going to – I mean, when Alabama, when Nick Saban goes – so the thing is, I just think we're just not appreciative enough of what Nick Saban has done. And when he's gone – and that equals us out. Like, so, okay, yeah, this is what I'm trying to say. Bomani, we've been following college football our entire life. I never really understood. I understood the Alabama thing, but I didn't really understand until Nick Saban went there, right? I mean, I'm old enough to remember, Dennis Franchione left Alabama to go to Texas A&M. You know what I mean? This is a very recent development in our lifetimes of Alabama being this, you know?
And like Franchione was relatively safe because the probation hammer had already started, right?
He didn't have to go.
He looked around. As I recall, his last game at Alabama was a game against Hawaii because they couldn't go to the bowl that year. So they scheduled a bowl game, basically. Mm-hmm. And it's at Alabama. Alabama invades Hawaii. He had a 10-3 season, looked around and said, this ain't for me, right. And got the hell out of Dodge. And by the way, his three losses that year were to a very good Oklahoma team on the road by 10 points.
Was that the 2003?
2002. No. 2003. Okay. You know where Franchione was in 2003.
That's Texas right. A&M, I covered that game.
Because you were there when they were losing 77 to nothing. Oof.
Lord have mercy.
Yeah, they lost a close game to Georgia, and they lost by 10 to Auburn. But he looked around and just said, I'm blowing this pop stand.
Yeah. Again, in our lifetime, I mean, there was that great Alabama team that beat Miami in the Sugar Bowl. We didn't see that coming. But you would have had to explain to me as a kid, like, well, why would anybody go to Alabama? Like, as a kid growing up in Houston – in the 80s and 90s, I remember, why would anybody go to Alabama? What's cool about playing in Tuscaloosa?
This the standard at Alabama. You don't remember this part. As we wrap this up, Gene Stallings took that job in 1990. He left in 1996. I'm going to run through the win totals for you, okay? 7, 11, 13, 9, ooh, 12, 8, and 10. And they ran him out.
Man, he's a native son, right? Like
he's a Junction boy. He's a Junction. Bryan guy more than anything else. But they ran him out.
Yeah, I mean, in that championship. I mean, again, like there's no that. Look, man, Alabama, man. I kind of want to. I'm thinking about them, like I think about Oklahoma and everybody else, and I'm not trying to, you know, talk about these programs or whatever, but you might want to think about like what the new era of college football is going to look like and like what your expectations should reasonably be.
Yeah.
You know, and I think LSU, as crazy as they are, they kind of have the right idea. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's like, hey, look, man, we might have to be 8-4 one of these years.
Yes.
As long as we're going to be, twelve and one in them other years, you know, and we're going to just go we'll hire till we get it right. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's like the best way instead of being like, man, I don't know, man, Georgia might be, we might get, you know, get rid of Nick Saban. Like, nah, man, it's like, just enjoy this, because it's never going to be this good again. Like,
do you plan to hire Kirby Smart? Oh, you don't, huh? Oh, okay. Yeah. Well then, damn, maybe that's what they mad at. Knew we should have fired Nick and hired Kirby.
I know, what they just be like, hey man, what about Dan Lanning? He looking pretty good right now, ain't he? You
know? Yeah, man. But hey, that is Joel Anderson. Check him out at Slate, H-Time. Check him out.
Don't forget. Did you see this? this weekend. Yeah. My boys against your boys.
Nah, just, you know, only one of us roots for a team that's in that game. I don't know why you just can't acknowledge that that they kind of pushed me to the brink with that damn song.
I better not see no text from you on Saturday then. You know what I'm saying?
No, no. I antagonize you. And I'm going to tell you guys this right fast about this dude I'm talking to. Joel creating the ultimate no-lose situation. He didn't want them to hire Sonny Dykes. They keep winning all these games with Sonny Dykes. And so all he does is hold on, waiting on Sonny Dykes to lose a game so he could every week it changes.
Process over
we'll
results.
See if they beat Oklahoma State. Then they beat Oklahoma State. Well, we'll Process see if we do this. Well, we'll results. See if we do this. So basically, as soon as they lose, I told y'all about Sonny Dykes. But if they win, he'd be out here peacocking.
Look, man, I'm saying let's just get through this stretch right here. Okay. He's got a losing record in November for his whole career. And you know, it could pop up. But hey man, look, it's gonna be an important game, big game. You know, I mean, he's gonna have to win an SEC road game against a ranked Texas team, the wealthiest college athletic program in the country, the one had its own linear cable network. You know, they also boast the architect of the TCU program on their staff right now. Many of the players on TCU's roster are people that Gary recruited and signed and developed. I mean, ESPN's own analytics department says there's a 73% chance that the Longhorns are going to win. So, I mean, you're really looking at an underdog situation right here. And, you know, I just hope that these little frogs can keep chugging along, man. And, you know, hope they can hang up against really my
hey,
big old
ladies
tough
and gentlemen,
mighty Texas.
Thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. Thanks for watching us on YouTube. You do this thing 3 times a week. Parker Owens, Dan Stanchik, Adi Khan handling things behind the scenes. Thank you, gentlemen. Remember, follow The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe. You are a hater, like I did that to Joel, huh?
Yeah. I don't want to see no text.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or follow on the ESPN app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.